I bow to my guru. I bow to him and all of you, because my guru is God in that form. God is the true guru. This is what my guru often told us. We must understand that the seeker, the truth, the teacher that we are looking for is inside ourselves. If you will excuse me, I'm going to sit down because I find I'm not altogether stable on my pins. I grew up in Europe during the interval between the First and the Second World War. I was born in 1926, just a little less than 10 years after the end of the First World War. And I remember going through Nazi Germany, and I was in Austria when the Nazis first came in. I remember in Vienna, there was a lot of fear then. We weren't allowed to say anything in the restaurants for fear that somebody would overhear us and report whatever it was. And there were all these Nazi officers walking in the streets and saying, "Heil Hitler," and I'd say, "Hi there." But it was not an easy time. My brother was in a train compartment as we were going through Germany once, and somebody, he had a roommate, and at the border the Gestapo took him and put him in a concentration camp. Those were very difficult times. Back after the First World War, somebody said that I feel that there's going to be another war and I don't want to be around when it happens. And so he spent years looking all over the world for some place that would be safe and secure. And finally, in 1938, he bought land on the island of Guam. Guam, as many of you know and some of you don't know, was virtually the center of the Pacific theater of war in World War II. We cannot escape the troubles of this world. They are always there. I had this great, intense desire when I was young to try to find a way of bringing peace into this world. I didn't want it just for myself, I wanted it for others. And I hit upon a solution which I have fulfilled in my lifetime. At the age of 15 in 1941, I decided that what we needed to do was start a community that would be away from everything, and that when the world sort of bombed itself back to the caves, then we would be able to be a shining light and bring civilization back to the world. It was a romantic dream, but since then I have actually been able to, first of all, perceive the theoretical validity of it. I used to worry when I saw, I was born in Romania and the communists came in there. My parents were in Romania after the World War because my father was sent there as a petroleum attaché for the government. And many of our friends were sent to Siberia. The thought of communism, I did not see the good side of it. I saw the way it was actually practiced instead of the beautiful theory of the greatest good for the greatest number. This, unfortunately, is a sheer blind. The truth of it is that it's the greatest good for a few people, and kill everybody who disagrees with you. And I found so many people, the only word that my father learned in Romania, basically of Russian, was niet. No, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do the other thing. There is a much better way of improving this world and creating a better world. If you can offer people an example of a group who live together in peace and harmony, then others will see this example and say, "I like that, I like the way it, I like that way of living." And so 40 years ago, and this is our 40th anniversary of Ananda Village, I decided to start a community. I had wanted to for many years, but finally I was able to found it then. And it has been a marvelous experience, and I do urge all of you to come up and visit us. We have a branch community in Palo Alto, Sacramento, Portland, Seattle, Assisi, and outside Assisi in Italy, and we're forming one in Pune in India. But this example, which people view a group of people living together and living in harmony, living in happiness, living in peace, this is an ideal of peace that I would like to uphold before you. But I would like to say that peace begins with that last song, home. Home is where you are. Home is your own inner self. And that's what I really want to talk about today. We are living in an age of very unsettled times. And the reasons are many. One is the very nature of the world in which we live. People always think, if I could just be left alone, then I would find everything I've been looking for. It does not work that way. Peace is not the absence of strain and worry, because there will be strain and worry. And if you were to find a place not in Guam, but some little Pacific island where nobody will come, or you could find, and there was a period in my life when I actually thought about going to the South Pole to be in complete seclusion there. Well, fortunately, I didn't go there. But wherever you are, you have your own nature to contend with. And I found, when I was trying to find what life is all about as a young person, as an adolescent, I found that the real problem I faced was me. Wherever I went, there I was. I'd wake up in the morning and stare them in their face. I just had to face the fact that if I was going to change anything, the first thing I needed to do was change myself. And then I discovered what a very difficult job it was, because the more I got down into my nature, first of all, I realized that I'm just a human being like everybody else, and I have the capacity for goodness and evil that everybody has, and it really worried me. I'd see a drunk, and I'd think, but I'm not a drunkard, but I could become one. I could see a criminal. I have no inclination to be a criminal, but he's a human being. I'm a human being. Why couldn't I be? Why couldn't I have all the terrible qualities that the Gestapo had and the communist torturers have and so on? I don't see it in myself, but how do I know? What security do we have that we are really going to be all right? Who knows what kind of temptations might come our way? I didn't see myself as being those things, but I thought, there, but for the grace of God go I. Those are my own self in that form. Everybody, in a sense, is specializing on behalf of the whole human race in being himself. Everything that anybody has ever accomplished or been, everybody has that potential also. You have the potential to be the greatest composer, the greatest Einstein, the greatest scientist, or the worst, the most heinous criminal in the world. Everything is latent in human nature. And I thought, well, I'm trying to improve myself, but I work on some little quality here, and I'm taking away energy from there, and that quality comes up. And then I'd rush over there to try to push it. It's like, sort of like trying to wash a shirt, and there's a bubble in the shirt, and you push it down here, and it comes up over here, and you rush there, and it comes up over here. And I realized that you just can't overcome it that easily. And I finally reached the point, and this is a point that most people think of in vague terms, but I came to understand that what I wanted was God. That without God and without help, I was pretty lost. I just would never be able to, in one lifetime, what can you accomplish? And so it was that when I came upon Autobiography of a Yogi in a New York bookstore, it was a great blessing for me. It was a sort of thing that God himself took a hand in, Because I had never heard of Indian teachings. I knew that India existed, but I didn't know anything of Indian philosophy. I'd never read any of it. And after reading autobiography, I took the next bus across the country, and I said to Yogananda, I want to be your disciple. And that was 60 years ago this September, and I've never changed my mind. But it would not have been easy if my parents had been in the country, so it was God's grace also. My father had been sent to Egypt as the petroleum, to lead a petroleum mission there. He was an oil geologist. And I put my mother on the ship to join him after packing her up. The very day that I put her on the ship was the day I discovered Autobiography of a Yogi. I have to say that was a great blessing for me. They were horrified, but there was nothing they could do about it. And I won't go into that story, but it was a thrilling story in my life. Somebody said to me a few months ago, do I need a guru? I said, no, you don't need a guru. But if and when you really know that you want God, then you do need a guru. I realized I had come to the point where I knew I wanted God. I knew I wanted to become perfect, as Jesus said, be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. I knew I wanted these things, but I had no idea how to accomplish it. And then I realized I needed help. When you know that you need help, then seek it. And God will send you someone who can help you. Now, the trouble with this world is that we keep thinking that if I just don't have this trouble and that trouble and the other trouble, that everything will be just fine. And it's just fine as long as you think, and this is the trouble with human life. We think that with the fulfillment of this desire and that desire, we will finally achieve everything that we want. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. If you look around you at the people that you know or the people that you see in the streets, everywhere you go, you see dissatisfaction in people's eyes. You see unhappiness. You see frustration and suffering. Because people think that they are going to find what they want when they get this or that, and when they find it, they find they don't have anything. You find that you make money. You know, the larger number of suicides in this world are from wealthy people. Not so many poor people. They're still climbing the ladder and thinking that on the roof there's a beautiful view. When you get up there, there's no view. I've mixed with wealthy people. I've lived in a well-to-do family. There's no happiness there. Money doesn't give it to you. Wine doesn't give it to you. Many people think, oh, I can get away from everything just by sousing myself. It doesn't work. You wake up and you've got the same old problems plus a hangover. Many people think through human love to find what they're looking for. But you look around and you see lots of happy couples. I say, be a fly on the wall in their own room, their own homes. There's not that much happiness in marriage. I speak from a happy home. I never knew my parents to have an argument. I never knew them to have a disagreement. There was harmony. There was love. But there was such compromise with the kind of love that everybody wants. You want something that'll thrill you. It doesn't thrill you at all. It's just the same old stuff. I'm telling the truth. You will only find what you're looking for when you've gone into your own home, inside yourself. But the trouble with this world is that if we think we have just everything set, we right now we're living in a time of great unsettlement. And it's a very worthy subject to talk about just for that reason. But the unsettlement that we face today is symptomatic of something else. Yes, it's symptomatic of upheavals in people's nature, but there's another reason for that upheaval. We're living actually in a transition age between an age when people thought that matter is solid, everything is fixed, everything is just where it ought to be, and people have tried, and they still hope that we can just get things set as they ought to be. The trouble is, life doesn't give that to you. Life doesn't give you settlement, it gives you unsettlement. And even when everything is peaceful, it gives you unsettlement. You never know from one day to the next. You may have $1 billion, $50 billion, $100 billion. You can still die of cancer. You can still have children who betray you, a wife or a husband who betrays you. You just don't find what you're looking for in the things of this world. But what makes this age today of particular interest from the point of view of settlement is that we're living in a transition between two ages. The age known as Kali Yuga, or the Dark Age, when people thought that matter is the final reality, and an age of energy, when people know that everything is actually made of energy. And this floor that I'm sitting on, and this chair I'm sitting in, it isn't solid as it seems to be. This world is not made of solid things, it's made of vibrations of energy. And this, it's possible to talk about now because science has proved it to be true. But everything about you is energy. You know, the space in your body is so great, relatively speaking, that it's quite comparable to the space outside our planet, where the nearest star is four light years away. There's much more space than solidity in your body, and even that solid isn't solid, it's just energy. But if you could take away the space between the atoms in your body, you would shrink to so small a piece that you probably couldn't even see it. We're living in a world very different from what it appears to be. And it's very important that we understand, first of all, the age in which we're coming to, because people look to the settlement. They look to find things as they would like them to remain. And the world will not ever be like that from one minute to the next. You aren't the same person you were when you entered this hall. You aren't the same person you were when you were 15 or 5 or... Yes, there's something inside you that doesn't change, but everything else changes. You have to learn to get to that center in yourself if you were ever to find the kind of settlement and peace that you are looking for. One of the first things that we need to learn on the spiritual path and in life is the cause of suffering. Suffering comes when things are not the way you have defined they ought to be. That's all it is. I remember I broke a tooth in Assisi in Italy, and I went to the dentist. It was a front tooth, and he said, well, you've broken it off right at the gum. We're gonna have to have you come back several times. I'll have to give you injection to numb the pain, then I'll have to kill the nerve, then I'll have to drive a post in there, and then I'll have to somehow stick that tooth up there. And so when he outlined all these things, I said, I don't want to waste all those times, do it now. He said, but then I can't give you anesthesia. I said, I don't want anesthesia. And he thought I was crazy. But in fact, suffering is defining things as they ought to be and finding that they aren't like that. So you tell yourself, I shouldn't have this pain in my tooth, and then when you have a pain in your tooth, because he's in there drilling and cutting your nerve and everything, then you think, well, I'm suffering. Well, if you can get rid of that thought, you find you can take anything. And so he drilled in there, and I think he was trying to prove his point, because at first he was really going at it pretty hard. And he went in there and snipped the nerve and showed it to my friends. I had a couple of friends in the dentist office there, and dangling there. And he started driving this piano. I just sat there and didn't pay any attention. Listen, there's no suffering you cannot bear if you can learn to change your mind about what ought to be. Somebody dies. Oh, why did he die? Well, he's going to die anyway. Why not accept that this world is always going to give you one disappointment after another until you finally reach the point where you can say, well, I can accept anything. It doesn't matter. Somebody, I was thinking recently, I'm an old man. I will probably die before very long. I might have the misfortune to live into my 90s. I don't know. But I could die of a heart attack. My thought is I'd much rather die usefully. If I can be martyred, that'll be great. And people think, well, gosh, I mean, what is it? I just don't care how I go. I don't care how I live as long as I live in tune with God. If you can define yourself, and if you can define what you're looking for in life in terms of, I can accept anything, it would be a very good attitude for you to develop. Develop catastrophe consciousness in the sense that, what if this happens? Can I take it? Yes. The more you can do that, the more you'll see that there's nothing that can come to you that can really upset your peace of mind. Because first of all, let's face the biggest crisis of all. Someday or another, you're going to have to die. It could be 5 minutes from now. It could be as you walk out of this auditorium. It could be 50 years from now. It doesn't matter. Sooner or later, look around you. How many people are still living after 1,000 years? 100 years? Very few. You're going to have to leave this body sooner or later. So you might as well resign yourself. That song, I Live Without Fear. I wrote that song because somebody had come to me and spent an entire hour telling me what an absolute waste my life had been. And I just listened to him calmly and thanked him. There was nothing to say to him. But afterwards, this song came to me as a gift from God. Though green summer fade, though green summer fade and winter draw near, my Lord, in your presence, I live without fear. Whatever comes, let it come. It doesn't matter. And if everybody likes what you... You know, I've never been nervous in front of the public because I've just assumed that I'm probably a fool anyway, and it doesn't matter. I just know that he is the one who can do anything, and there's nothing I can do. The most important thing we've got to do is understand who we are. We are not this body and this ego that we think we are. And that is really the cause of all our suffering, misery, and unhappiness in this world. God, when he created this universe, didn't have things out of which he could mold it. There was nothing. He didn't make a statue the way Michelangelo would make the Pietà. He had to become everything. And how could he do that? He had to dream it out of his consciousness. There was nothing but consciousness. Science today thinks that consciousness is the product of the brain. It is not. Consciousness is the one thing that you can't get rid of if you want to, because it's the only reality there is. And there is another reality that you can't get rid of if you like, and that is self-consciousness. People think, in fact, I've even read statements to the effect that we should be thinking in terms of computer rights, as if computers would become so intelligent someday that they would need to think about their own rights. That's ridiculous. Look at a worm. This could be nothing simpler than an earthworm, could there? And yet, it is not only conscious, but self-conscious. You try to prick it with a pin and it backs off. This sense of self and sense of consciousness is all through the universe. And that infinite self became everything. It became every atom. As Yogananda described it, he said that every atom is dowered with individuality. So you are that infinite self who has been born into a little atom, your little ego. That's like the burners on a stove, a gas stove. Each little burner looks separate, but it's all a manifestation of the same flow of gas underneath. And you can make those burners look different too by putting little different chemical powders on each one of them so that one will look blue and another one will look red, another one orange and green. And you can make the flames big or small depending on how large the opening is, but it's all a manifestation of the same underlying flow of gas. And we are, in a very true sense, like that flow of gas. We are that infinite consciousness which has been reflected like little pieces of glass in the sunshine. But when the sun goes down, the glass loses its light. We have our light to the extent that we reflect the sunlight of divine consciousness. When I was a young man, again, to go back to that period of my life, I wanted to be a playwright, and I went to the Dock Street Theater in South Carolina, and I was studying stagecraft, and I realized there was just no point in trying to write plays. Because I wanted to write plays because I wanted people to know truth. And I realized I didn't know truth, and so why flood the world with my ignorance? And I gave up writing. I would look at a page and write page one or a book, chapter one. I didn't know what to write because I didn't know what truth was. After meeting my guru and he told me to write, but I then knew what I could write and what I had to write. And I've written, now it's the official number I was just given by Padma McGilloway is 91 books, which is enough to keep me out of trouble, I suppose. But I remember going out one night there when I was in Charleston, taking a long walk. It was one of the most important moments of my life. Because I had reached the point where I realized that what I'm looking for and what everybody's looking for will not come through science. Because whether there are a billion galaxies or one galaxy doesn't make any difference, really, to your own understanding. I realized that knowledge, intellectual knowledge, is not enough. My heart has to be satisfied. Then I tried politics, and I realized that's not the answer. I tried the arts, I tried music, I tried everything I could think of. But I always realized that what I wanted was joy inside. With joy, I would have everything. Without joy, I would have nothing. And I went out that night. I reached the point where I realized what I had to know was what God is, and what is God, and what am I in relation to Him? And I took this walk and I thought, what can he be? If there's a God, what must he be? Well, he can't be somebody up there just waiting for me to make a mistake so he can clap me into prison for eternity. That doesn't make sense. What kind of just think of the usual idea of what God is and what our destiny is. And supposing we go to hell, it's for eternity. Just think of a loving God doing this to you. Think of it rather in this way too. Supposing you were born into a city slum and out of self-defense you joined a gang. And at the age of 18 you killed somebody and you were yourself killed. And so you went to the other place, let's face it. people think a millennium means something. What's a millennium? 1,000 years, that's nothing. 1 billion years is a wink in the eyes of God, in time. And suppose a couple of billion years down the road, somebody says to you, what are you down here for? Well, gee, I don't quite remember. How can a finite cause have an infinite effect? It cannot. There has to be something more about this. And I was thinking, what can God be? Well, what makes me ask the question? That I'm conscious. And if I'm conscious, that consciousness has to come from somewhere. It can't be just a product of my mind. And I realized God had to be. If I'm conscious, then he has to be consciousness. And then I looked back over my life and I found that there were times when I was more in tune with a larger consciousness and other times when I was less in tune. I remembered a beach party we'd been on, and I went walking down the beach away from all the partygoers, and I was thinking, this same ocean and this same sky that's beating here in New England is also beating on the shores of Europe and England. And the same sky unites us all. And there's something much more involved than just this little partying that we do where we are. And that consciousness, I realized then, I'm a part of that. And so this night, as I was thinking of that, I thought, well then, how can I be more in tune with that consciousness? Because if I drink, I'm less conscious. If I'm asleep, I'm less conscious. If I think only of myself, I'm less conscious. If I think of others, I'm more conscious. And I began to realize that the whole goal of life is to become more conscious, more in tune with that greater myself of which I am such a tiny little particle. And that is what all of you are. You are little bits of glass shining in the sunlight. And you don't have peace because you don't know where that light comes from. You think it's somewhere outside, and you think I'm going to find it in money and sex and power and fame, in all the things that people look for. And the ways of deluding ourselves and thinking that we will find it in this thing and that thing are infinite. There's just no end to how many things you can look for. One lifetime doesn't do it. It takes one lifetime even to overcome some really bad habit like being a drunkard. Just think how much you can accomplish in 60, 80, 90 years. Nothing. It takes a long time to get out of this delusion and to realize that you are a child of God. The goal of life is to know who and what you really are. You are a child of the infinite. You are made in his image, and the goal of all religions is to help you to understand who and what you really are. God is not up there, he's inside you. And when you've discovered that God inside you, you discover he's everywhere. But what keeps you from understanding that is a whole bundle of self-definitions that you carry with you wherever you go, and you keep adding to it. You get born and you have a human body, and you have to take care of this body, and you have to pamper it and feed it and exercise and give it air and defend it from attack. And bit by bit you begin to feel very concerned about this body. And it's a male body, it's a female body, it's an American body, a French body, an Indian body. All these different bodies that you may, all these different self-definitions that you may accrue to this body. And finally, the time comes when you know you've got to go and you think, I've got to leave it all. It was never a part of you in the first place. You are always that infinite one who came for a while and then leave. We must, if we're going to find peace in this world, we must first of all adjust ourselves to the possibility of calamity. Calamity will come. Calamity is coming. It's coming just around the corner right now. I believe we're on the edge, on the eve of a very serious depression. Whether I'm right or not, I don't know, but something's going to go wrong. You can lose your home, you can lose your job. And if the whole country's losing it, or if you alone have lost it, it's still the same tragedy as far as you are concerned. What will you do if you suddenly find you can't take care of yourself? What will you do if you find you're suddenly ill? It pays to be calamity conscious in this sense only, to realize that there's a center inside yourself that can remain unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. This is how my guru put it. When you can see that it doesn't matter if I'm ill or if I'm well, if I'm sick or dying or everything is going beautifully, sooner or later it will go wrong, and this is the nature of this world. You've got to realize that you're living on a sea, and you can never reach the point where one wave remains there. It'll always come down, and life is always a movement of ups and downs, and it's a fact that you cannot change. Therefore, you need to, first of all, learn to develop even-mindedness. It does not mean to be apathetic. It doesn't mean that when you see a beautiful sunrise or sunset, you say, oh God, another sunset. Oh, you love beauty. This is one of the things that I have found in India that many people make a mistake about. They think you're not supposed to enjoy anything. You're supposed to enjoy everything, but with the joy of God. In other words, where do you ever enjoy? You always enjoy it in yourself. You see a beautiful sunset, and you are able to enjoy that beautiful sunset if you're feeling well, but if you don't, you don't enjoy it. If you're hungry, you're thinking out of the sunset, but gee, that looks like an omelet, doesn't it? A turtle can look at a sunset and just wonder if it's good enough to eat. There is something in everything that you enjoy in this world that begins right here. And if you can understand that truth, then you can enjoy everything. So that even when people are drilling your teeth or doing things to you, you can enjoy. I went into the hospital back on December 1st of last year for a major operation. They took out about this much of my intestines. And I went in there feeling absolutely blissful. Because I thought, well, if this is what God wants, fine. If he wants to take away this body, fine, doesn't matter to me. And I went in there. In fact, I was singing a song to some friends of mine just as I was on the stretcher to be taken in. And I said, you know, it's strange, my voice has become so deep in these last months. None may linger on the way. None may coax time to stay. I was laughing about this fact of my voice having become so deep. And I went in there and just didn't even think about it. So let them put me under, let them rip my intestines out. Who cares? I'm not these intestines, for heaven's sake. I'm not this body. And when I came out of it, I knew that something had been lifted from me. They'd taken away a cancer. And I felt fine, but I felt blissful going in, I felt blissful going out. When you can reach the point where you know that your happiness is inside and not outside, then you have more than peace in a troubled world. You have bliss, you have joy. And this is one of the most wonderful things I found when I read Autobiography of a Yogi. I had reached the point in my life where I was thinking seriously of going and becoming a hermit and just seeking God and meditating. I didn't know, thank God, God protected me from that because I wouldn't have known what to do. But still, that was my thought. And I thought that if I can find peace of mind, that's enough. And when I read Autobiography of a Yogi and found the infinite joy that is there for the seeking, you're all just this close to it. If only your attention were not inward and instead were not outward, but instead inward. It's inside yourself that you're looking. You know, every time you look for something and you fail to get it and you're disappointed, what do you do with that disappointment? Oh, you sink into yourself. That's your solution. Your disappointment is your solution. Get away from that outward thought that I can find it, if I can just get enough money together, if I can just get this bank loan, if I can just look at the TV commercials. It's just amusing to watch them jumping up and down because they won a lottery or because they got this beautiful Twinkies or who knows what else. I know when I was in Charleston, because I have a decent voice, I thought of becoming an announcer, but I found it absolutely impossible to get excited about Pepsi Cola or whatever it was. So I found, no, I can't. I cannot speak if I cannot be sincere. And so I could not be an announcer. But you must try to think in terms of who you are, where you are. You are always right here, wherever you are. You can go to the South Pole, you can go to India, you can go to the South Sea Islands. You'll always be the same old self. So why not rejuvenate that self? Why let it be the same old self? Some people, Yogananda used to say, are just psychological antiques. And when they go to heaven, the angels say, oh, here's another antique, better send him back there. But you've met people like this, and I hope you are not one of them. Well, what I always say to people is, and they repeat, why not let every moment be new in your life? You'll find that it can be exciting that way. You don't know what's going to happen. And when it does come, you don't say, oh, no, it shouldn't be that. It's got to be this. Just let it be. Flow with it. And in fact, that's the kind of age we're coming into now. You know, Swami Sri Yukteswar, the guru of Paramahansa Yogananda, he explained a very ancient system in India. It's known as the system of yugas. And it may sound like absolute nonsense to people today, but if you can first of all get into your heads that this universe is really made of consciousness, it's a manifestation of consciousness, then that consciousness brought everything into existence in ideas and then in energy. And that energy then was able to vibrate grossly enough to create the appearance of matter. But if you can realize that this whole life is really only a dream, and it seems so logical. I remember one time I had a dream in which I was flying. And I thought, well, gee, people don't fly. This is, maybe I'm dreaming. And so I tried logically to figure out whether I was dreaming or awake. And logic finally brought me to the conclusion that I was awake, I was just doing something very unusual. And what was my surprise when a moment later I woke up? It is a dream, it just seems so real because it's real, not just like your movies where you're real to sight and sound only. This is real to the sense of smell, taste, and touch also. It seems so real, but it's not real. And if you can understand that everything that happens to you is really just, it's a dream, then you understand that my reality is this one who was looking out at that dream. You are, you know, a very interesting thing. They have found that the center of the universe is no longer this little world, a little world. But they find now that there doesn't seem to be a center anywhere. And the deeper truth of that is that God, truth, reality, is center everywhere, circumference nowhere. You will never know everything there is to know about an atom as long as you just try to do it through your senses. But you can discover the atom that is your own self. And once you've understood that self, you've understood the self of everything. This is the incredible thing. How can you find the reality behind this vast universe with 100 billion galaxies, each one with one or 200 billion stars? It's inconceivable. But if you can understand that you are the center of that universe, if you can get down to who you are at your root, and it's really quite a simple thing to do. Easy? No. Simple? Yes. There's a difference. It takes a long time. It's hard work. But once you're out of it, you think, good God, what was all the excitement about? Of course this is what it's about. And when you reach that, then you realize that you are everything. That you become God. This is the goal of life. You know, when Jesus Christ said, I and my Father are one, the Jews around him, the Pharisees, were accusing him of blasphemy. Did Jesus say, my Father says so, and you better believe him or you'll go to hell? No. He said, don't your scriptures tell you that ye are gods? Everyone in this auditorium, and all the atoms you're sitting on for that matter, and the seat you're on, it's all God. And if you can understand that that is what life is all about, then you discover that nothing can touch you because you're untouchable. You're beyond everything. God is in everything, God is everything, and yet he's not touched by anything. And this is how we must learn to be. Get rid of this hypnosis that you're an American, that you're a man, that you're a woman, that you're young or you're old. These things are not who you are. If with everything that you experience in life, tell yourself, I'm experiencing it here. When things go well, let it be. I remember there was this one boy at Mount Washington. He was a fellow monk of mine who was plunged into moods after moods. And I said to him, look, don't feel too badly. In another 40 years, it'll all be over. That was enough to plunge him even deeper. But you know, it's true. Nothing is going to last forever. And 40 years is really not the truth. The sun shines today and tomorrow it's raining. Well, I wish it would. But the truth is that everything changes from day to day. Everything is just up and down. This universe was created on the principle of dvaita, duality. And there cannot be. How did God bring this vast consciousness of himself into manifestation? By creating vibration. And vibration means movement in opposite directions from a state of rest in the center. If you were to try to change the level of the ocean by increasing the height of a wave, you couldn't affect it one iota. Wherever there is a wave, there will have to be a corresponding depression. And in this world, there can never be what you're looking for, because there will always have to be opposites. For every success in this world, there is going to have to be, for you, not just for somebody else in the world, for you, there will have to be a failure. For every fulfillment, there will have to be a disappointment. And you look back over your life and you keep thinking, I've worked so hard for this, I've worked for so hard for that. Always there's something goes wrong, isn't there? Always. You can't get away from it. You have to realize that the only solution is to pull back from that expectation of finding. People spend lifetimes trying to find a fulfillment that always has to end in zero. There's no other way out of it. That level has to become equalized. For every success, there has to be a failure. For every sunny day, there has to be a rainy day. For every joy, there has to be a sorrow. This is what your life will be. And the more you react to good things, oh, wonderful, wonderful, the more you're going to find yourself going into a hangover the next day of how depressing it is. This is the nature of reality, and you can't get away from it. When you find that it just doesn't matter and you're willing, you must first of all persuade your mind that I can take anything. If people want to kill me, stab me, let it be. The only reason I suffer is because I think it shouldn't be. If you can really adjust your mind to accept that whatever is, and it doesn't matter, you will find the astonishing thing that the result of that will be not apathy, but joy. You will find yourself feeling joyful all the time, no matter what happens to you. And the same thing with love. You think you're going to find it from this person, but always it lets you down in the end, if only because that person dies. But human love is such a compromise anyway, with this something in the heart that longs for perfect love. It doesn't exist anywhere except in the infinite. But when you can find that love inside, then you find that you love everybody because you love him. and you see Him in everybody. Here's a very good reason for loving everybody. Everybody in the world is looking for the same thing you are. We all are looking for happiness. We think we're looking for power. We think we're looking for happiness in money or fame or all the things people look for. And when they fail to find it one way, they find it, define it in a new way, but they always think they're going to find it that way, but they never do. And yet, when you found your inner self, you find it everywhere. Everybody is looking for happiness and they don't know it. They think that they define happiness this way and that way, but when they give that up, they still keep on searching happiness. Think, well, I didn't find it in fame, maybe I'll find it in money. No, you will never find it in things because things change. Things are outside yourself. When you can understand that the joy that you are seeking is your own inner self, then you find you can love everybody because you see that everybody's looking for that same thing. And as you feel compassion for yourself, looking back at all the mistakes you've made, so can't you feel compassion for other people too? You see that they're just making mistakes. Somebody comes up and holds you up and shoots you, and in the astral world you can say, well, poor fellow, he'll have to suffer for it, but it won't last. Really, it sounds extreme when I put it that way. But the truth is that even the worst mafioso is seeking happiness, and the poor fool doesn't know how to find it yet. He will come to the point where he does know, and he'll become a saint. A saint is a sinner who never gave up. This is what Yogananda said. You are a saint. Don't ever say that you are a sinner. It's the worst sin to identify yourself with your mistakes. And sin is only a mistake. You think that you're going to find what you want through this, and it didn't work. You will have plenty of time to work it all out, but sooner or later you will have to find that point, reach that point in your life where you say, I know that what I'm looking for is perfect love, perfect joy, perfect peace. Peace is only the beginning. Peace is what people think they want, and yet look at the nature of duality. It's such a strange situation that after a world war, what are the books all about world war? You'd think that would be the last thing people want. But people are attracted. Opposites attract each other. And so if you don't want unhappiness, you want happiness. But happiness is always somehow attracted to the unhappiness. There's always the thought of losing what you have. Bésame mucho como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Kiss me as if this were the last time I could ever kiss you again. This is what life is, that even in the midst of your happiness, you know you're going to lose it. You're bound to lose it. And in the midst of unhappiness, there's always that sort of lingering thought that, well, I bet I'm suffering more than he is. There's somehow in the midst of suffering, you know, one time many years ago, I bought a dictation machine. I was in New York, and the man recorded onto this dictation machine to make sure it worked. And that night, I went to Carnegie Hall, it wasn't Carnegie Hall, anyway, the main hall for a symphony. And Raphael Kubelitz was directing the symphony. And in the middle of the Moldau of Smetana, I waited for a pause, and I thought, I wonder if this, although it's only a dictation machine, I wonder if it'll record at a distance. So I turned it up high volume to try to record, and then when there was a pause in between two movements, I pushed the button. I pushed the wrong button. Hello, testing, 1, 2. So help me, he reached 4 before that sound, which filled the whole hall. The conductor whirled around like this. Life's supremely embarrassing moments. If ever I had an embarrassing moment, it was that. And I noticed that in the back of my mind, there was a congratulation. This is going to be a great story to tell. When things go bad, you almost pride yourself on how bad they are. All is equal in the end. You find in the end that the waves, whether they were going up or down, whether I was suffering or rejoicing, there's something inside that never changes. There, most people have it buried so deep that they never find that joy. But once you become aware of it, you find that that joy is always sort of under the current, under all the different things that go on. When I was thrown out of SRF on my ear, it was the greatest tragedy of my life. I'd given my whole life to that way of life and to serving God through my guru. And I was, my efforts had been completely misunderstood, and I was just rejected like a piece of dirt. And there was great suffering for quite a long time. But the amazing thing was two things. First of all, I got compromised into giving a lecture sometime, and people afterwards said they felt so much joy from me. I thought, joy? But I realized, yes, there was a level of joy that was never touched. You'll find that that joy can be with you always. Seek God. It's the most practical thing you can do in life, because God is not somewhere out there in the heavens and up floating around in the clouds or something. He's right in your own self. And when you've found who and what you are, you will find that this world, unsettled or not, warfare or not, depression or not, there will be something inside that cannot be touched. Work on it right now when things are not so bad for you, because they're bound to get worse. We're right on the cusp of a whole change in this world. And depression and warfare are, I would say, certainties. There will be world war. You can't see this much hatred and animosity and fanaticism. You can't see it without it. It's exploding. Atom bombs falling here and everywhere. It will happen. But if you are at peace in yourself, how to become at peace? One other thing is, don't think of yourself. Think of other people. Think of helping other people. The more you give, the more you find that you forget yourself. And in forgetting yourself, you find that joy comes in through the back door. That's why Jesus Christ said that he comes like a thief in the night. You don't see where he's coming from, but the more you live in the right way, the more you find he's there and has always been there. God is you. God is your own self. And when you can find this inner consciousness of his unshakable presence, yes, you may go through hard times. I have been through many in my lifetime. And I have long ago reached the point where I say, thank you. Thank you for the troubles, because you helped me to remember this isn't where I belong. And no one can take away the only treasure that I have, my love for Divine Mother. When you know that that is your treasure, then you know that how people treat you and what you lose and the terrible things that can happen to you, it doesn't matter. You have been coming and going from this world so long, and you will keep on going until finally you understand that you are that infinite one. Get rid of this sense of self-importance. It's such an unimportant thing to be self-important about. And yet, the more you see that he is everything, the more. I remember a few years ago, I was at a well, first of all, there was a conference here, a installation of a Zen master in San Francisco, and I was present. And afterwards, I was talking to a young woman, and then I asked her what her name was, and she told me, and she asked me, what's your name? And I said, well, I'm Swami Kriyananda. Oh, but you're famous. I said, well, maybe, but why do you say but? She said, well, all the other famous people I know seem important. I liked that. I don't want to be important. I was at this function on the East Coast, and it was a big event with the popular speakers from all over the country who were invited to speak, and I invited some of these speakers out to dinner one night, and I was the host of this gathering. You'd think that for that reason alone, I would have been given some attention, but some of these people were so self-important, and they were all relating to each other and totally ignoring me, and I thought, what an absolutely lovely experience to be totally unimportant, even when the situation more or less makes it seem as if you'd be important. You don't matter. What does it matter what people think of you? They're usually wrong anyway, aren't they? But even if they aren't, there is so much to gain from life if you can get yourself out of the way. If you can realize that I've found that I'm able to do things in this world just because I know I can't do them. But he can do everything. When I was young and trying to think how to be a writer, I'd see chapter one, page one, and I couldn't go any further. But when I find now that he can do anything, I find that it's amazing to me how in just even time itself can be banished. You can do a job in very little time if you let him do it. Try to feel when you're cooking. Try to feel when you're walking. Try to feel when you take a walk at night with nobody around you and just feel that God is working, walking through your feet, walking through your hands. God is thinking through your thoughts. And if there's a dog barking, think, dog, God is barking through that dog. Maybe he has a message for me. And the more you can share your thoughts with God, there's a beautiful, he was a Christian missionary, Frank Laubach, a great man. I got to meet him before he died. And he wrote a book called Letters of a Modern Mystic, in which he said we must think of God in the second person. Don't think he, think you. And share every thought with God. And if you can take a walk at night and feel that you're sharing every thought with God, you'll find that it seems as if he's talking to you through that barking dog or that passing car or whatever it may be. You suddenly realize that he's everywhere and that in everything he does have some special mission message for you. The more you can think this way, the more you find that life is just a symphony of delight. So, yes, we are coming into more and more unsettled times, but you can become more and more settled if you don't try to settle your body and your ego and try to make everything safe around you and set everything as it ought to be. It'll be destroyed in a moment that way. But if you can be settled in yourself, if you can have peace in yourself, and know that everything you're looking for is really just your own self, so that if you succeed or if you fail, it doesn't matter. If you find that people like you or hate you, it doesn't matter. You find then that you can love them anyway. The more you know that you live in him and that this is your true treasure, the more you will find that you and God are one. This is the mission and the message of all the great masters who ever came into this world. They've come to teach us not how great they were, but how great we are, potentially. What they have done, we have done. They're no different from us. All we have to do is turn our attention inward instead of outward. And if outward, then in the right way of seeing God everywhere. Learn to find yourself in yourself, and you will find that self in everything. This is the goal of life. This is the meaning of life. And this is how to find life. And as Jesus put it, have it more abundantly. Thank you. I'm going to ask the choir to come up, and we'll sing one song to you. nightly when starlight enfolds us. Peace is its lullaby.
Sing with us amen at the end.